Hello, and welcome to Reflections on Life. My name is Liz Bobo. This is a program where we examine and talk about and interview people about various aspects of life in Howard County and how they relate to what is happening in our state, in our nation, in the world, and sometimes how they relate even to spiritual life beyond our material life. Today, our guests are Martha Clark and her daughter, Nora, and they will be talking with us about farming and agriculture in Howard County, about land preservation, the environmental impacts of the global warming on agriculture as well as on every aspect of our life. And they have a very unique and major position in the issue of agriculture here in Howard County because Martha's father was Senator James Clark. And so, obviously, Nora's grandfather was Senator James Clark. And most people in Howard County know of the Clark Farm on Route 108, east of 29. A very large percentage of the people living particularly in the Columbia area are aware of the Clark's produce stand, and which they've now expanded into a business where they also sell meat to various people from the community. So, a couple of things about Senator Clark before we start the interviewing. He was the founder, the author, the sponsor of the Agricultural Land Preservation Program here in Maryland and in Howard County. He served as the president of the Maryland Senate prior to being in the political world. He had served as a, what did he serve as in the military?
He was a glider pilot.
A glider pilot. Yeah. It's the word glider that I keep forgetting.
You go into war without an engine in your plane.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And to me, all of those contributions that he made to our community are also just sweetened by the fact that he was probably my most effective mentor in my political life. He sought me out very early on when I started participating in public issues and was a person who I could go to be sure that I was thinking clearly, that I had my priorities clear, and was just a very good mentor to me. So let's start by talking about the work that you do, Nora, with the Clark's Stand. Is that the title of it?
Yeah, Clark's and Produce Stand, I guess.
Yeah, which your mom has told me that used to be her responsibility, but now she's branched off into other responsibilities relating to the farm and that you operate the stand.
I do.
Yeah, okay.
When I came back from college in 2009, that was kind of the first place that I wanted to be on the farm. And there's something that I'd done with my grandfather throughout all of growing up, but definitely as I had a larger role in it in high school. And so coming back after college, during that time, he had passed away. So it was the first place I wanted to be and the first place I wanted to kind of grow our farm presence through that stand, because I knew that it had a following and we had some great customers from the community. And so I was excited to grow them some vegetables.
Yeah. And are you, you're really doing your world work now in one of the greatest areas of need on our planet, I think, because you're not just feeding people, but it's a definite contribution to working against global warming and having the food grown closer to people's homes, that we can't have to ship everything across a 3,000-mile country. We need to get back to raising more of our food closer to home, and you're playing a major part in that. So when people come by, do they engage you in, you know, any personal conversations about why you're doing this kind of work? Do they know that your mom grew up on that farm? Do many of them bring up your grandfather? Or do they just come and get their delicious tomatoes and their great corn on the cob and head back home?
we try to engage as many people as we can as an educational opportunity, and a lot of people engage us. We have had people shopping at that produce stand for 30 or 40 years since before Columbia or since they moved to Columbia, and that was the closest roadside produce stand for them. And my grandfather always grew wonderful Silver Queen sweet corn, and he was really known for that. So a lot of people mention that. I mean, food can create such wonderful memories. And so when as soon as we open up in the summer, people every year we always open the same time, and people always go, "You opened late this year. I've been waiting and waiting and waiting." And I go, "No," it's just that anticipation, and they're so excited when they finally get to come and taste that food, and that it just brings up a memory, and they have to share it, whether it's with my grandfather of the farm or my mom. And so that's really wonderful. And the people that are new to the area, because there's always new people all the time, and they always say they drive by, you know, 108 commuting to work or running errands. And then they finally stop in, and if they allow us, we love to engage with them and educate them on what we do and why we're doing it and how we're doing it and how it's different than what they might be buying from a regular supermarket. And so we think that that's one of our best opportunities and assets, is being able to sell directly to our community and say, "I'm the farmer that grew your food," and having that communication and allow them to ask questions, even if we think they're silly questions. We want them to feel comfortable talking to us because we're their neighbor and we're growing their food, and we want them to know that. And even when I hire folks, like I hire some high school teenagers to work in the summer, I always love that they work in the garden a little bit and at the produce stand a little bit, so they can either feel that connection, and then that connection and excitement that they've learned, they share with our customers as well. So even if they're not talking to me, who's the farmer the whole year, this 16-year-old kid is learning to be a farmer, and they're a farmer for the summer, and they really get a lot out of that. And that's something that they can translate to our customers as well.
Is it your sense, Nora, and you too, Martha, that more average people are becoming aware of how important it is to eat as much fresh, uncontaminated food as we possibly can, and to pay attention to how we're treating the soil? And that's my sense, but I'm not working in the field that you're working in, field, no pun intended, that people are becoming more aware.
Yeah, we're getting more and more specific questions about how we raise our animals and how it affects the land and the soil kind of every year. You know, you might start out with, "Did you grow this tomato?" And then, "Did you grow this tomato organically?" And then, "Did you grow this tomato in a sustainable manner where you were healing the soil and allowing the soil to be regenerative so that you can use it year after year?" So we definitely have gotten more questions about that, and people are more interested in the details of how we do things. And I think that's really interesting. I really like that people are learning about how we do. And it also opens a conversation for us to let them know how difficult some of those things can be, and how maybe something that we'll practice that we do costs a little more money or takes a little more time, but we feel that it's better in the long run. So, and maybe that's why our prices are a little higher than the grocery store. So I really, all of that opportunity to engage and educate. And I love when it comes from their question, because then they're interested in how we do things and how it's affecting the environment around them.
So you truly are acting as a teacher. You're much more than a salesperson of the farm's produce.
Yeah, because the people,
teaching us.
You could go to a grocery store and you could buy everything you need at one stop and you can go home. So the people that are taking time out of their day to make two or three or even just one extra stop to our place, I want to thank them for that. I mean, I really appreciate that they're taking their time to care about what they're eating, what they're feeding their family. And so if they have a question, let's talk. Let's answer it. Let's reinforce, you know, the positiveness of you stopping and taking this extra time. It's not easy to pull off 108, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And anybody that does, I am very thankful for. And that stems, too, from having our petting farm operation. We have a lot of young families that come in with their kids that are getting to interact with these livestock and be outside and have a lot of room to run. And so being able to engage these kids at a younger age is really great, too. And so that's kind of how the whole farm, you know, works together. And having the petting farm and allowing these kids to be outside and see this kind of stuff and then touch it and then take it home and eat it, it does that whole circle of life.
The whole circle of life.
And, you know, unfortunately, it's so hard to get answers about food these days. You know, every time you open up a newspaper or listen to the radio, there's some study saying that this is good for you or this is bad for you. And last year, that was good for you and this is bad. You know. So it's really, really hard to know what to feed. I'm so glad I don't have young children right now, because I think all you can do is give them water. There's just not a whole lot of things that we fed our kids. You know, it's just a horror to think that you might feed your kids that now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's the simplicity of knowing that something was raised right here, it didn't get in a truck and was, you know, taken across the country, as you said. And, you know, the closer you are to the food when you get it from the field, the more nutrient dense it is, and obviously the fresher it is. And, you know, there's so much that's so much better for you from eating something that's very local. And, you know, we don't spray, and we, you know, so you don't have to worry about pesticides or anything like that. So you can know what you're getting, and you can talk to the person who grew it. And I think that's really important.
Martha, Nora mentioned the regenerative aspect of the way you operate things. Do I remember correctly? I know I do, because I asked you before we came down here, but I wasn't certain until I did ask you, that your father also played a big role in the whole concept of no-till farming, and even nationally, that he played a leading role in that.
Yeah, the thing about farming, you know, is that, you know, you think about farmers as being old crusty guys who, you know, do things the same way all the time. And that is not true. You know, farming is constantly changing and constantly evolving. And Dad was always really good about embracing, you know, not a new fad, but a new technology that looked like it was going to, you know, make things better. He was very involved with the Soil Conservation District from the very beginning. And we've always had conservation methods on, you know, on the farm. And so he embraced no-till farming when it, you know, was shown to be a better way to keep your fields from eroding. And so, yeah, whatever new technology looked like it was the right thing to do, you know, he would embrace it and talk to other people about it.
And the fact that he was also in public office and in as high a public office as you can hold in the state of Maryland, other than the governor, as the president of the Maryland Senate, which is a big deal, and the sessions, the legislature's in session right now, and we're all hearing a lot about what their hopes and aspirations are for this session. But he was able to spread the understanding of the importance of taking care of the land and the way we farm and what we eat to, you know, all of the legislators there, which was, it was just a perfect position for him to be in. And I certainly learned so much from your father.
Well, agriculture is still the number one industry in the state of Maryland, but considering our location on the eastern seaboard between Baltimore and Washington, the development pressure has always been so intense here. And so, you know, he had the vision to realize that we needed to, you know, save the farmland, buy the development rights early on, when it was still, you know, something that we could afford to do as a state, and before the developers developed all of the state, especially, you know, in our county, you know. And so the amazing thing is Maryland was one of the first states that passed farmland preservation, and up until just within a couple of years, we actually had more actual acres in farmland than states that are 10 times bigger. We started early and we were aggressive about purchasing development rights. And the number of acres we have in farm preservation in Maryland is still a really large number of acres, much more than a lot of states.
Which
we started early.
And this whole issue so fits in and is more understandably connected now with this whole idea of global warming, that, you know, that we keep some of the land, that we don't, you know, build concrete all over. I know one of the things that he helped me with when I was serving as county executive was to come up with another way to help landowners, farmers, be able to continue the cost of operating their farms when they were being wooed to sell their property. And that was something called an installment purchase agreement, so that farmers were able to keep farming longer and not succumb to, So quite a role, your family, and I'm sure you know it, but I want you to know that I want more people in the community to realize just how connected what your family has done, and others. There are certainly other farmers in the county, but none that had the connection that your dad, and now I know you're both doing it yourselves. You're talking, you could be teaching a course somewhere on the importance, seriously, the way you explained at the beginning of this session. So it's a very major aspect of public policy and of being able to live a healthy life on this planet in here in this community. Let me shift to a little something else about your dad. I have a copy of his book that he published, and I keep it down in my office. And with it is a photograph of his showing me around the farm. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very, you know, priceless thing to me. And I've learned so much myself. My mother's family came, my mother came from a family that ran a tobacco farm down in Calvert County. So, of course, is there anything that depletes the earth more than the, you know, the growing of tobacco? And they did not know that at the time. That it's I just feel so honored to have known him. And there's a building here at the Community College campus named after him, right? The library,
the library
building.
Uh-huh.
And that was from all the work he did on budgetary matters. So what do you see coming? Do you see many changes that you will have to be adapting to in the size of your operation? Or do you think that's, you know, pretty stable and settled?
What keeps me up at night, I guess, is what you ask people. You know, we have spent our entire lives here in Howard County and many generations before that. And there's a big stone in our front yard that says, never sell the land. So, you know, so we don't have any intention of leaving. And we love all our customers who are our neighbors and that kind of thing. But we worry about the neighbors who think of farming in their definition of farming. And so when we try to diversify, which we need to do, and we might do something that they don't like, well, you know, I'm not saying that we're going to start a winery or a brewery or start doing weddings and having a bed and breakfast or whatever it might be, or growing hemp, you know, or whatever it might be. But we have to have the definition of agriculture to embrace all of those things, because, you know, if we can't make a living on our farms, it doesn't matter that we've, you know, held on to this farmland. You know, to me, you know, having a 50-acre field that's mowed as a yard, you know, is not a farm. And it's not, you know, producing the food for our, you know, our neighbors and that kind of thing. And we will continue to do that. But that may not make us enough money to keep the farm going if it's just the produce. So we might need to do something else, whatever it might be. Maybe it's a petting farm. And we've done that, and we have wonderful neighbors, and everyone has been just been fantastic about the times when it gets a little crowded on the fall, you know, when the school tours come or we're busy on the weekends. So, you know, we have wonderful neighbors, and they have been, you know, just fantastic about, you know, our operation. But other farms, throughout the county and throughout the state are coming up against issues like that. And so I think it's just really important that we all, work together. And, I don't believe any issue can't be resolved if you get people together in a room who, share a common, concerns, and being able to have food grown locally is just really important to all of us.
Mm-hmm. And it's also needs to be a very high priority of government, mm-hmm. at all levels, mm-hmm. at the county level and the state mm-hmm. level and the national level.
Yeah, I mean, if we're only growing our produce in Florida and California and something like a massive hurricane goes through Florida, or some, major wildfires in California, which of course have both happened, and we can't get that food here anymore. Every part of this country has to be able to grow its own food, so that you can have it, mm-hmm. locally.
Right.
It's important. It's
and
really
it, and
important.
It can be done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Part of it, I think, is having people in elected office who have the knowledge, and I'm going to use the word courage, to see to it mm-hmm. that farmers are given what they need in order to be able to continue to farm, because there is, of course, tremendous pressure for more development of farmland. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. We can't blame mm-hmm. the people, I don't think, who are putting that pressure on. Mm-hmm. I mean, they will want to make their business as big as they can mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. as big a profit as they can, but that's where government comes in. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, I am, without mentioning partisan politics at all, I'm really so encouraged by the number of young people all over the country who are getting more involved in politics and mm-hmm. willing to run for public office. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very encouraging time. So when we put them together with you and all the knowledge that you've developed, Nora, of how everything is interrelated. Do you know of any legislation coming up in Annapolis? I do not. That will be affecting the farming community this year. I'm sure there will be something, but I haven't followed it that closely yet.
There's an interesting bill that's coming up that's sort of addressing this whole issue of getting local food into the hands and the mouths of everyone who lives in the state. It's calling for a task force to really drill down on the issue of getting local food into schools, prisons, hospitals, all community colleges, every place that, everybody knows that it's a good idea, but it's the devil's in the details. The picking it up from the farmers and getting it to the school or the hospital or whatever, it's that we've never figured out how to do that. Plus, the getting over the hurdle of the low budgets that the cafeteria workers have to work with and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there's storage issues, when you're not getting your tomato sauce out of a 30, pound can, you're getting it from two crates of tomatoes that are coming in mm-hmm. to your farm fresh every morning. That makes a big difference. It's a really good big difference for the children who are getting a much better, higher nutritious food. But, we took all the cafeterias out of the schools. I mean, they used to cook.
Yeah,
in schools.
Yeah.
Now they don't cook in schools anymore. Now they heat things up, so we might have to go back to,
right.
cooking again.
Right.
So,
would create more jobs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there you go.
For people. it is something how we can think we're doing the right public policy at one time mm-hmm. and then look and see what we've really done yeah. is to have stepped backwards. Mm-hmm. So this is an issue that's going to be, it's an economic issue. It's mm-hmm. an environmental issue. It's a huge health issue. Mm-hmm. It just mm-hmm. encompasses almost mm-hmm. every aspect of mm-hmm. life. Who would think,
right.
you know, what we're doing on our farms, you know, who would think yeah, it ties yeah. into yeah. absolutely yeah. every bit of it. Yeah. So I'm trying to think if there are any other things in Annapolis that I'd want to bring up, but I don't think so. I think knowing about that coming up, that they're taking a look at mm-hmm. how to address this yeah, issue yeah. is really very, very encouraging. So the book that I have about mm-hmm. your father.
Right, his memoir.
Down uh-huh. in my office, yeah. Yeah, is a very treasured possession of mine. And I read it from time mm-hmm. to time. Just right. I don't read it. I leaf through it. Mm-hmm. I have, and it's not the only book I do that with. Mm-hmm. I have books that have been inspirational to me in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, a few dozen of them, actually. And now that I have a slower lifestyle myself since I'm not in office. That's one of the things that I do to indulge myself. And also, since my life now is so unstructured, and I intentionally have my life very unstructured, when I read through these various books and inspirational sayings, it sort of keeps me tethered to the earth mm-hmm. so I don't just, you know, float off in my unstructured area. But one of the things I want to, I want to wrap up this recording by what I mentioned to you when we were out in the hallway, and that is that when your health was failing rapidly, and a friend of, and possibly even a relation of yours, I'm not sure, called me up one day and said, "Liz, if you want to get to see Jim Clark again, you really ought to go over soon." So I wondered, I felt a little like, was I intruding? And I was told, no, you know, just go, you know, don't make a big fanfare of it. And I did, and Lloyd went with me, and we drove down the entrance to the farm and went to the door, and I think it was one of your cousins, I'm not sure, someone young who I did not know. And she showed us into what I now know was the living room. And your father was in a hospital bed. And he was the back of the bed was up, and his eyes were open, but he wasn't, there wasn't any sense of recognition at all of me there, which was fine. But I sat there with him for almost half an hour. Lloyd stayed for about 10 minutes, and then he was ready to, you know, I'm very comfortable. I've been with quite a few close family members when they died. I mean, literally right there with him, and I'm comfortable with that, and it means a lot to me. So that was precious time for me. And so I stayed about another 20 minutes after Lloyd left the room, and then we left, and we went by the produce stand. And we bought corn, and we bought tomatoes, and that might be all, but we went home, and we had our evening meal of eating Clark's Farm tomatoes and corn. And the next day, my friend who had told me, if you want to see Senator Clark, which is what I've always called him, you might want to do it soon. And I learned the next day that he had died, that I guess it was maybe very early morning, if uh-huh. I remember correctly. Yeah. And so that is something for which I'm yeah. so, so grateful. And I don't know, I don't believe in miracles, but I do believe there are all kinds of connections beyond what we can touch mm-hmm. and see and feel. Mm-hmm. And so that is just a very treasured last memory of your dad here on this earth, but the impact he had on me will last with me for the rest of my life. And thank you so much for what you're doing to keep the farm going and to teach us and to train us. And I think it's just, I can't tell you how happy it makes me to see you, Nora, doing what you're doing. Besides that, I love to come by and buy the corn and tomatoes. All right. Thank you for being here.
We loved being here. Thank you.
This has been Reflections on Life. We're glad that you are joining us and listening to this program about the earth and how it feeds us. We hope to hear from you again.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.